produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition. Visit norml.org. Tuesdays here on the Stash, we focus on medical and patient issues. And today, we have a special extended interview with Normal's senior policy analyst, Paul Armentano. It's important for all of us to understand how easy science is spun by politicians and the media. Much of the science that marijuana opponents use to support very unproven theories about pot addiction are animal studies. The data collected on animals is then translated into human behavior. And again, it's important to read behind all of the headlines, folks. And in the age of cyberspace, there's no excuse not to go look it up online and get some wisdom with your information. Let's get to this important interview today with Paul. We're going to take a look behind the scenes at the science of marijuana and animal testing regarding cannabis. Paul, welcome back to the program today.
Good to be here, Chris.
Thanks again for joining us. And you're here to help us unspin some of this data surrounding animal testing that happens with marijuana. First, why do researchers use rats and mice and the like so frequently? And why do they give the data that they collect from these studies so much weight?
The irony is that rat studies are often used by researchers when a drug is in very early development. Rat studies are generally done as safety studies. They are done initially to determine whether a drug is potentially toxic or very harmful. The idea is if it shows toxic effect in rats or in animals, then it will never get to the human clinical trial stage. So that's actually the main reason why researchers utilize animal studies, particularly rat studies, in the beginning phases of exploratory research when we're talking about different drugs. Now, in the case of marijuana, it's actually rather ironic. If you go back to the mid-1970s, that's when you actually have some of the first clinical trials regarding the use of cannabis. And as most people know now, there's actually very few clinical trials, particularly in this country, taking place as it pertains to cannabis, but there's a whole bunch of preclinical or animal trials taking place as it pertains to cannabis. So we actually have this paradigm going in reverse. In many ways, we began with the human clinical trials with marijuana in the 70s, and it's somehow reverted back now to animal trials, as opposed to beginning with animal trials and eventually going to human trials. One can argue that in some ways the reasons that this is happening, particular to cannabis, is because, in fact, cannabinoids, particularly THC, are quite non-toxic. They're non-toxic to humans, and they're particularly non-toxic to animals such as mice and rats. In fact, they are so non-toxic that synthetic compounds of these cannabinoids can be administered to animals in very large doses, much larger doses than scientists would be comfortable giving humans. But they can administer these large doses in rats because the compounds are non-toxic. And then they can then investigate what they believe in some cases, to be potential harms, not harms due to toxicity, but other potential harms, and they can try and explore those avenues in animals, research that they would not be, I believe, comfortable doing at this point in humans. Of course, you know, when you're dealing with rats, you have a couple other advantages that you don't have in clinical trials. Obviously, it's a very controlled environment that the rat is living in, much more controlled than they could establish for humans. The dosing is very controlled. In most of these animal studies now, synthetic cannabinoids are actually being administered intracranially or injected. That is obviously not the way humans administer cannabinoids. But it allows researchers to give very controlled dosages. In several of these rat case studies, and one or two that we'll probably talk about today, they actually administer what is known as a cannabinoid receptor antagonist, which is a blocking agent that, when administered, no longer allows cannabinoids, including endogenous cannabinoids, to bind with the receptor. It's a situation that, in some ways, brings about immediate withdrawal in animals. Naturally, you can't do that sort of experiment in humans, but they can do it in animals. So, you know, there again, those are some particular reasons why animal studies are utilized so often, particular to cannabis. But my larger point would be is that this is actually sort of an upside down triangle, where we had early basic clinical research going on with cannabis that in many ways established its safety and efficacy, but for some reason researchers have abandoned that clinical work and have instead in recent years focused more on preclinical work, where when you look at research regarding other drugs, it's typically the other way around. You begin with animals and make your way to humans. You don't start with humans and then revert back to animals.
Now, you know, we did speak with Rick Doblin about the National Institute of Drug Abuse's sort of monopoly on clinical cannabis. I mean, is it easier for researchers to do animal trials and research on cannabinoids than the other kind of research that, you know, Rick's trying to open up?
Sure, most certainly. And in that, and that's not even just the case in America. That would be the case anywhere in the world. And I do think it is one of the reasons why you see researchers often doing these preclinical work with synthetic cannabinoid compounds, whether it be synthetic THC or other non-psychoactive compounds like cannabidiol, or in some cases even synthetic analogs, which are synthetic agents that bind to the cannabis receptor but are not naturally present cannabinoids in marijuana.
Paul, as Normal's senior policy analyst, your job is to be reading all of this preclinical research and scientific journal publications out there. What are some of these rat or animal studies that really stand out?
Well, you know, as I said, it's very dangerous to take the preclinical findings and extrapolate them to humans. And I say that from the standpoint of, in many ways, an activist and a researcher. But by the same token, when you see preclinical findings that show very favorable results, it's not necessarily fair to extrapolate those to the human condition, just as it's not scientifically valid to extrapolate preclinical data that shows potential harms of marijuana and then extrapolate those to the human condition. And unfortunately, we see plenty examples of the latter. One, in my mind, particularly egregious example that is stated over and over again, beginning in the mid to late 1990s, anyone who was involved with this issue or, frankly, even picked up a newspaper would have seen headlines stating that science has now shown that marijuana primes the brain for the use of other drugs and appears to be addictive in a manner similar to cocaine and heroin. That line was repeated over and over again and still, frankly, is repeated to this day, that we now know marijuana is addictive in a similar manner to cocaine and heroin. Well, that statement is based on the extrapolation of a rat study. And when one looks at how the study was done, it becomes even more alarming that a public official would interpret that finding in such a way that it has any relevance to humans. The way the particular study was done was that mice were administered synthetic THC, and I believe in this case they may have been administered it intracranially, but I'm not positive because it's been a little while since I've seen this study. And they were given massive doses of this synthetic agent over a period of time, and they were then given a cannabinoid receptor blocking agent, so that after the mice had been exposed to THC and very large doses of THC on a regular basis, they were then given an agent that would not allow their brain to uptake any more THC, whether it was external or exogenous THC that was being administered by these researchers, or even potentially endogenous cannabinoids that their body might have been naturally producing. All of that was cut off. And what they found was when that happened, these mice in particular exhibited some what they called classic symptoms of withdrawal, in that they behaved in a way that showed they were somewhat distressed, they walked backwards, they scratched their eyes, they acted perturbed for a short period of time. Based on that finding, the then head of HHS and others, including individuals at NIDA, put out press releases that said, we now know that marijuana is addictive, quote-unquote, like cocaine and heroin, giving no mention to the fact that in human clinical studies, adult users of marijuana have never exhibited those sort of symptoms, and in fact that the study they were talking about was based on rats who were not only given a synthetic THC agent, but they are also given a cannabinoid blocking agent, such a scenario that would never occur in humans, and thus really had no relevance to the human condition unless we are going to start intracranially administering THC into the brains of adolescents and later giving them a blocking agent, in which case then I suppose they may scratch their eyes and walk backwards for 15 minutes. The other ironic thing about that study was I talked to one of the researchers who was involved in it, and I said, you know, I've read news reports and I've read the journal report on this study, and nowhere in it did I see any information on how long these quote-unquote classic symptoms of withdrawal were exhibited by the animals in this study. And the researcher looked at me and he said, you know, that's a very good question. I believe I should apply for a grant to study it. And I said, come on. I've spoken like a true researcher, of course, but I said, come on. You were there. You must have some idea or could speculate some sort of a guess as to how long the rats in the study exhibited these symptoms. You know, was it 1 minute? Was it an hour? Was it 24 hours? Because one would think the time period of these withdrawal symptoms, even under these extreme conditions, would be rather relevant. And eventually, after we had this conversation for about 5 or 10 minutes, he said, well, if he had to guess, he would have placed the time period at about 15 minutes. So the point being is that when you hear a federal government official talking about marijuana and its impact on the brain and addiction and claiming that it has addictive properties similar to cocaine and heroin, what they are really talking about is that in one study where animals were given massive doses of synthetic THC and administered straight into their brain and then given a blocking agent, that those animals exhibited signs of withdrawal such as walking backwards and scratching their eyes for 15 minutes.
You know, why is it so dangerous to make these leaps into human behavior, especially by the media?
Well, keep in mind, oftentimes the clinical research on some of these subjects does not yield the results that the federal government that's oftentimes funding the research would like. One of the main reasons that this research, when it comes to the notion of dependence liability or addiction when it comes to marijuana, one of the chief reasons that it is done in animals was because humans, when they use marijuana, do not generally show symptoms of withdrawal when they stop using marijuana, which is why marijuana is not ranked as having a particularly high dependence liability or a reinforcing property to the user as compared to other legal and illegal drugs. Oftentimes, drugs that have high incidence of dependence, such as cocaine, will be self-administered by animals. And in fact, there's an animal model where a mouse or a rat will go and it will click on a bar and it will get a pellet, and the pellet will either be placebo, or it could be water, or it could be food, or it could be cocaine. And eventually, under the scheme, if the drug has a high potential for abuse or dependence, the animal will begin pressing the lever that gives it the illicit drug over food, water, and obviously the placebo. Well, they tried that experiment with THC, and it didn't work. The animals didn't really care for THC, and they continued to have food and water. So that's why, eventually they had to try and get this model to work, to try and get it to yield the result they wanted to yield, i.e., marijuana is addictive. They actually had to go through such great lengths as to come up with this model where they gave the rat THC, and then they gave it a blocking agent, and then they monitored what the rat did for 15 minutes. The only reason we got to there was because they weren't getting the results they wanted initially in humans. And even, in fact, the National Academy of Sciences, when they did their report for the Institute of Medicine in 1999, they noted that because THC has a long half-life and a slow elimination from the body, this fact prevents substantial abstinence symptoms in humans. It's just not something you have. So if you don't have it in humans, the government figures, well, try to at least show it in rats.
Paul, this has been fascinating. And, I know that you'll continue to look at rat data out there, but I hope that we'll be all be more skeptical about it. I mean, what should folks, listen for as the telltale sign that clinical research is coming or preclinical research is coming from an animal rather than, a Petri trial or Petri dish trial or something?
Well, always read the study. Don't just read the newspaper report or even worse, the headline. Always go to the source and read it. And when you actually read the abstracts of most of these studies, they're not politicized. They may be politicized later by individuals. But when you read the studies themselves, 9 times out of 10, they're written in a fairly open, unbiased manner, and they always have to list their methodology. They always have to explain just how the study was done. And that is what, that should take any uncertainty away as to what exactly is going on, what were the methods of the study. People should also understand that when any study is called a clinical study, that means it was done in human patients. If the study is called a preclinical study, that means it's done in animals. One other note that since we've been talking about rats, but another one of my favorite studies that was publicized heavily by the press, and particularly by NIDA, which naturally funded this study, goes back to 2000. And I'm just going to read a quote because I happen to have it in front of me from the NIDA press release about this study. The lead researcher in the study was quoted in the press release and, of course, then quoted quite liberally by the press as saying, "This finding suggests that marijuana has as much potential for abuse as other drugs of abuse such as cocaine and heroin." Once again, NIDA was spending your taxpayer dollars to try and show that marijuana was somehow as addictive, quote unquote, as cocaine and heroin. And certainly from this person's quote, you would have assumed that this was a study done looking at humans and looking at marijuana use, and that they must have shown it to be quite addictive in this human population. But if you actually read the study, you will see that NIDA actually did this test on squirrel monkeys. And the way they actually did the study was that they took these squirrel monkeys and they hooked them on cocaine. Before they ever gave them THC, they hooked the squirrel monkeys on cocaine. And then after the monkeys were sufficiently hooked on cocaine, they then replaced the cocaine with saline solution to see if the animals would then self-administer saline as they had earlier learned to self-administer cocaine. Well, when they stopped self-administering the saline, they then replaced the saline with THC, and sure enough, the squirrel monkeys then began hitting the lever again and self-administered THC. That was the study that led to the quote, and I'll read it again. This finding suggests that marijuana has as much potential for abuse as other drugs of abuse, such as cocaine and heroin. So, like I said, please, when you see these statements in the press and when you see them coming, particularly if they're coming from certain public officials like officials at NIDA, please take the time to actually go to the source and see where the research was done and what they are extrapolating, because it is very easy to just read that quote and assume what research was done rather than actually going to the study and seeing that in this case we are talking about squirrel monkeys that were previously hooked on cocaine.
Well, Paul, it's becoming easier to understand where a lot of this overblown anti-pot rhetoric is coming from in a way out there. Just spin a little science on rats in this direction, and that's what you got.
Sure. And, you know, it's interesting to note that the two studies I've just talked about, I believe it was 1998, and it was published in Science, the initial study talking about rats and the cannabinoid blocking agent, and then this study from 2000, which was also in Science, with the squirrel monkeys. I believe, unless there's been something over the past couple of years, that these are the only two studies that have been conducted in the U.S. to show animals exhibiting signs of withdrawal and or self-administration of marijuana. It was only done these two times under these extreme conditions. So when they're talking about marijuana and its potential dependence, this is what they're basing it on. These two studies, it's all they've got.
So the rats have us all fooled?
Well, they certainly have a lot of our politicians fooled, you know. And, of course, you know, by the same token, I would tell people to be cautious when interpreting preclinical findings when they also show positive associations. You know, there was a finding maybe 6 or 7 months ago that got quite a bit of press, I thought well-deservedly so, that showed in animals a THC synthetic agent could stimulate neurogenesis. Would that happen in humans? I have no idea, because the animals in that study were given massive doses of actually not even synthetic THC, but a synthetic version of an endogenous cannabinoid that's more potent than THC. And under those circumstances, they did see evidence of neurogenesis. But there again, to extrapolate that to the human condition of a human inhaling marijuana, we're really talking apples and oranges. It wasn't the same thing, and it shouldn't be interpreted as if it was. As I said, one of the benefits of cannabinoids are that they are so non-toxic that a study like that could be performed where an animal is being administered massive doses of a drug, in fact, much higher doses than would be relevant to humans who would normally consume the drug under typical conditions.
Wow.
You can't generally do those sort of studies with, say, even an agent like alcohol, because you would kill the test subject. But you can do those with cannabinoids.
NORMAL's website, as well as the Media Awareness Project and DrugSense.org, offer a wealth of information so that you can seek out this scientific data and read it for yourself. Thanks again to Paul Armentano for joining us today, and make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. And another big thanks to Paul Armentano for contributing to this program every single week. Now we're going to round out our show today with some music found up at podshow.com. And this particular artist is getting some big label attention out there. This is Adrian Pierce with One Perfect Day.
I don't know you, not sure I want to. You're far away, so far. So far, my resistance, it's the distance. I'm far away, so far, so far. Just one day,
found up at podshow.com, the place for pod-safe independent music. We have links at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks again to Paul Armentano for contributing to today's show. Podshow.com for all the great pod safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.